Hey, Dog Speak Geeks, do you know that we offer virtual lessons? You can sign up at any time through info@dogspeak101.com. Also, don't miss out on our dog communication seminar on demand or one of our live seminars in Middle Tennessee. We would love to assist you with any and all problems that you have, so give us a call, set up your session today. Hey, Dog Speak Geeks. I hope you're having a wonderful week. Thanks for joining me on the pod. If you're new here, welcome. You are on the track to become a Dog Speak Geek, and your dog is going to appreciate it. I am Nikki. I am your host. I am a canine behavior expert. I have been working with people and their pets for 30 years. One of my specialties, trauma. Unfortunately, I'm very busy with that because a lot of our dogs are suffering for trauma, and it's going to be because of what we are going to talk about today. But before I get into that, if you have not signed up for the newsletter, I highly recommend it. This week's newsletter offers a free product for you guys that's only good for the rest of the month, but you have to go sign up to figure out what that is. I'm not going to tell you. I want you to sign up for the newsletter because we really give out good advice, and I'm not going to sell your information, and I'm not going to inundate you with newsletters. I'm doing once a week right now, but more than likely that's going to move to twice a week because I'm just getting too busy to get it done. So please go and sign up for that. Also, if you are following us on social media, be sure you're subscribing so you don't miss out on things. Because of the way algorithms are working right now, people are just not seeing our stuff. And I'm going to be honest with you guys, I don't get paid to do social media. I don't get paid to do this podcast. So my money only comes from working with clients or my online content that you guys purchase. I appreciate it if you would check out our social media, subscribe, follow along, rate and review the pod wherever you guys are listening. That's going to help us get new listeners and possibly get us maybe a few advertisers that can help, offset some of the cost for putting out this pod on a weekly basis. I appreciate you guys so very much, and I really want to reach as many dog owners as I can because that means I can help more dogs. I need your help on that. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, but I'm going to be honest, I'm not doing a whole lot over there because they're just not being seen. And if they are being seen, people aren't bothering to click likes or hearts or comments. And so honestly, it's not efficient for me. And I hate saying that. I hate saying that I'm not going to give you guys material because you're not engaging. But the truth of the matter is, I don't have a lot of time to be doing a lot of those extras. I am very close to finishing up the book, and that has taken quite a few months of my life. I started it last July, and I'm about to wrap up with the probably second rewrite, I would say, but I'm adding a whole other chapter. So who knows? This book may become bigger than what it should be. But anyway... enough of that. I don't really have any other announcements. I am going to be putting on some online content, some live events for April. Be sure that you are following along so you don't miss out on that. This is going to be part one of more than likely two parts. Who knows? I might talk too much and it may end up into a three-parter. We'll just have to find out and see. We're going to just roll with it. If you've listened long enough, you know that's how I roll. We just kind of go with the flow and see what happens. If you've not checked out last week's episode with animal communicator Sandra Larson, you're truly missing out. The woman is amazing, and animal communication is amazing. And I believe that a lot of us have more capability than we give ourselves credit for. So go and check her out and see what you think. All right, let's jump into it. If you're not familiar with me, I look at dogs and really have for decades now with a more holistic lens. I'm always looking at gut health. I'm looking at the inside of the dog. and I'm looking really inside out. I'm not just looking at external behavior and labeling it and saying, let's fix that external behavior. I take external behavior and I see it as information to really understand what's going on with the dog. When we are talking about ethology, and because we look at dogs with an ethological lens, and if you're not familiar with ethology is just the scientific study of animal behavior. It focuses on observing animals in their natural setting to understand how they interact with their environment, with other animals, and with humans. This approach really examines the evolutionary, genetic, and environmental factors that shape behavior. When we are able to look at it this way, it truly does offer a deeper understanding of why animals act the way they do. You know, in today's society, when we look at a dog such as a border collie, and I use herding breeds as an example a lot because I get a lot of phone calls from owners who have herding breeds that are complaining of behavior. And it's unfortunate that the behavior that they are complaining about is a natural behavior that occurs because we bred the dogs to do that back in the day when we had farmland and we really needed some help wrangling in livestock. When we look at livestock guardians, right? They were bred to guard the livestock so that, you know, they weren't being lost to wild animals, wolves, coyotes, bobcats, whatever it was in the environment. The livestock guardian breeds were meant to hang out and basically resource guard the livestock. And then I get a phone call from a Great Pyrenees owner wondering why their dog is resource guarding something in their home. When we start to look at dogs, not as the pets we want them to be, but as the genetic makeup of what we created, it can help us to understand why we're seeing the behavior that we see. When you have a border collie lunging at bicycles and cars, when you're walking them in your neighborhood, and you call me and you want me to stop that behavior, we're going to have a real conversation about why that behavior is occurring and why it's unethical to suppress that behavior and punish that behavior because it's inconvenient for you. I know that's harsh. I don't mean to be too harsh today, but it is harsh, but it's the truth. And I'm always going to be here to give you guys the truth. I'm going to try to say it in the nicest way possible, but I'm going to give you the truth. It's not right for us to suppress that behavior and punish that behavior because it's inconvenient for us. And that is something that I see across the board. Right, people are constantly, and I see it on social media, when people go, hey, I have this dog and we're having this problem. Can you guys recommend a dog trainer for me? My favorite is recommend a dog trainer that doesn't cost an arm and a leg. Well, then you can just go find the teenager who decides that they like dogs and they want to start training and they watched a few YouTube videos. And that can happen because our business, our profession is not regulated and anyone can call themselves a dog trainer, which is very, very dangerous. And it should be something that we are worried about. But unfortunately, no one cares about making new rules or new laws in that. At least not right now. And we've been fighting this for, well, ever since I've been in it, which is 30 years. So it's just a common thing that is going to continue to be a problem. So our job as professionals who have been doing this, who take our job very seriously, this is not a hobby. This is not something we do on the side. This is something that we spend 40 hours plus a week doing. And if we're not doing it, we are educating ourselves on better practices, on new supplements that may help your dog. There are so many things that we do on a regular basis to be better for you and for your dog. So when you're searching for someone, if you are searching and they're saying, yeah, I can just throw a prong collar on that dog or an e-collar on that dog and we can shock that dog every time it lunges after a car, and you're talking about a border collie, that's unethical. And it's really absolutely cruel Because it's inconvenient to you doesn't mean it's right to do. If it's inconvenient for you that your dog, as a herding breed, is lunging at cars in the neighborhood, then you need to either move, walk your dog in another area, or three, get a different breed. Get a breed that doesn't give a crap about the cars going by, right? We have to stop thinking that everything on this world or everything on this planet was put on for us. No, we are just one thing that makes up this planet, and we need to learn to be a little more respectful of the other animals that occupy this world and occupy this planet. All right, I'm going to get off my soapbox. That sounded a little rough. I'm passionate today. It's a Monday. I'm feeling a little passionate. I think it's because I went and watched softball this weekend, and it was such a good time. And I think I'm still kind of riding that high of watching softball and winning. But anyway, I digress. So today, I really want to get into understanding the five domains of animal welfare. And animal welfare is, it's so much more than meeting a dog's basic needs, right? If you ask anyone, what do you think a dog needs? People are going to say they need food. They need shelter, right? They need to make sure that they're safe, that someone loves them. They need love. That's a big one. They need to be loved. And honestly, I know we want to think that and we want to say that, and because it's something that we can freely give. Think about it. If we think of dogs as needing love as a primary need, then it helps us feel better because it's something we can give them with very little effort. I mean, let's be real. How many of you walk past dogs on a sidewalk and immediately you fall in love with them? You've never talked to the dog. You never petted the dog. Hell, the dog may not even have looked at you, right? But all of a sudden, you're like, oh my God, I love him. You see a dog on social media. Oh my God, I love him. This happens all the time. If love was all dogs needed, damn, yeah, I'd be out of a job because I wouldn't have to teach you how to do that. You know, when we talk about dogs that live in the backyard and people call animal control, animal control says, hey, as long as there's fresh water, there's food, and they have shelter off the ground, there's nothing we can do. And the thing is that dog that is living with that shelter and that water and that food may actually be doing okay if there are other needs being met. Now, I'm not a proponent for just, throwing dogs in the backyard or hooking up on long leads and making them live on a tether. I'm not advocating for that. Understand, not advocating for that. I think our dogs should be a part of our family, and being a part of our family is being inside that home. Now, if you have a farm and you have a working dog, such as a livestock guardian breed, Great Pyrenees, that is that dog's job, and that dog is very, very happy. But if you have a Great Pyrenees living in the home, we may need to talk just a little bit to make sure that we're still meeting that dog's needs when it comes to the five domains of animal welfare. So I just had to pause for a second and take a little breather. And then I look over and my Roddy is just hanging her head off this bed like the big old goofball. And then it made me think about 20 minutes ago, as she was trying to find somewhere to lay, she was on the lounger, she laid on the couch, then she laid on the floor, then she went to the dog bed, then she went to my bed. She just wanted to find somewhere comfortable, and I thought, damn, girl, you got a good life here. You've got so many places to choose from. So you see, we all really get into that sometimes, where we look at our dog and we say, look, you got a roof over your head. I feed you damn good food. Their food sometimes is better than what I'm eating for dinner. Y'all have heard me talk about it. Where I had a pork butt cooking for my dog as I was making myself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. They have, soft beds. They have access to outdoors. They get to visit the neighbors. They have playmates. They have a pretty damn good life looking from the outside in. But let's go inside the dog and let's find out what's going on in there to truly understand if their life is good or if they're just saying, yeah, this is not bad. I mean, it's pretty good. I'll take it. All right, like if you put me in a really, really nice home and it had, you know, a big old bonus room where I could watch my sports, maybe play some, you know, shoot some pool, throw some darts, right? Maybe I had a really nice setup. Then I had this great backyard, a pool I could go swimming anytime I wanted, a hot tub, maybe I had a sauna. I had all of these things. I had food coming to me. I had a chef cooking for me. I had a masseuse on a daily. Y'all, I would be living the life for about a week. I'd be living the life for about a week because here's the thing. You can give me all of that, but if I am not able to teach and educate about canine behavior and help humans have a better life with their dog and help dogs have a better life free from trauma response and stress response and anxiety, fear, phobias, if I can't do that, then my life is not worth living. It doesn't matter how nice my home is, how nice my car is, and all the fun things that I have. Even if I'm able to travel anywhere I wanted, I would enjoy the hell out of that. Don't get me wrong. But if I'm not able to do what I was born to do, which is teach you, I'd be miserable. I'd be miserable. All right? So when you look at our dogs, you can give them all that you want and all that they perceived to want. But if you're not giving them what they truly need from their viewpoint, not your viewpoint, their viewpoint, then are we really giving them the best life possible? One of the most comprehensive and widely accepted models for understanding this is the five domains of animal welfare. Now, this framework helps us evaluate not only whether a dog is surviving, but whether they are truly thriving, just like I'm talking about, right? I could live in that nice house with that masseuse and that chef, but am I thriving? Am I truly happy? No, probably not. What are the five domains? All right, the five domains include nutrition, physical health, environment, behavioral interactions, and mental state. Now, each domain is going to influence the other, and together they will shape a dog's overall well-being. We are going to get into a couple of parts today. We'll see how long it takes me. I'll just probably make this about 45-minute episode. So if we only get one or two domains in, then we'll just continue with it next week. Let's start with domain number one, which is one of the most important things I look at when I am dealing with behavior, and that is nutrition. And if you are a new trainer, if you're an up-and-coming trainer, if you are young and you're looking to dive into behavior, or you just want to stick with training, that's fine too. Encourage you, push you, beg you to educate yourself on nutrition and proper nutrition, good nutrition. You do not have to become a nutritionist, but to believe that the veterinarians are the only ones to have this knowledge is naive. Veterinarians do not get real nutrition education in school. They do get education on using diets for certain diseases, but they're not really getting nutrition for behavior, which is what you need to know. I was recently muted on a positive reinforcement Facebook page because I mean was encouraging the trainers there to get education on nutrition. And a moderator who has not been alive as long as I've been training dogs, literally I've been training dogs longer than she's lived on this earth, muted me because she did not believe that it was appropriate for trainers to talk about nutrition. And this is a real issue because what's going to end up happening, and I see it happen on a regular basis, is that trainers will try certain techniques. And this one was particular on leash manners. This trainer had tried 8 different techniques, 8 different ways to try to get this dog to walk nicely on a leash. And she was not making any headway, maybe a little headway, but not enough headway. And my question was what the dog was eating because of that poor gut health. can cause impulse control issues. It can cause frustration when we don't feel good. We don't have as much tolerance. Therefore, we're not going to be as responsive to commands or, you know, cues that we've taught. And as I was saying, hey, look, we need to look at nutrition, because eventually what's going to happen is the person that paid her money to teach her dog how to walk nicely on a leash is going to get frustrated that nothing's working. And in her mind, she's going to say positive reinforcement techniques don't work. This dog is just stubborn. This dog is just different. This dog is just strong-willed. Bullshit. That's bullshit, right? That is saying either, number one, you don't know how to teach the technique appropriately, or two, you're not looking at the other things in the dog's life that play a part into your leash walking, like gut health. And so the owner who is paying this money is going to think that positive reinforcement techniques don't work. And you know what she's going to do? She's going to go to an aversive trainer who's going to use a prong collar or a shock collar, and she's going to stop the dog from pulling. And she's going to say, look, I should have just done this the whole time. So now the dog is not only probably still has poor gut health and is going to end up with anxiety based on that gut health, because brain gut axis, but the dog is also going to be on a shock collar or a prong collar now. And so for me, this was a real issue. And when I'm hearing and seeing that young trainers are saying, no, that's not our lane, we need to change the way we're teaching. We need to stop teaching training techniques, and we need to start teaching animal welfare, ethology, how organisms learn, and truly looking deeper at the relationship between the dog and the guardian, the environment, what genetics, what are those, you know, what part are they playing, and what's the past learning history of the dog. So if you're new and you're young, or you've been in this for a while and you never thought nutrition was important, I'm going to encourage you. You do not have to become a nutritionist, but what you can do is educate yourself instead of on the next little training technique. Like, ooh, let's use, I don't know, this new ABC training technique for loose leash walking. I just made that up. Instead of learning that, you need to start learning about the dog in general, the deep part of who the dog is. So needless to say, I contacted the owner of that page, but unfortunately, they're just not going to do anything about it. So I left it, you know, and this is why a lot of balance trainers aren't going to stay on a lot of these pages, because you say something that someone disagrees with, even though you're an expert in your field. I'm an expert in my field of dog behavior, and I study very, very deeply in nutrition because it's so important. To be muted and to think that that's not important tells me that we are definitely on the wrong side of things. And if we're not giving our clients that information as the professional, then we are doing a disservice to that dog. So nutrition, and that goes beyond just providing enough calories or free access, or, you know, however you want to look at it. Nutrition is so important, and you've heard me talk about it 100,000 times on these episodes, if you've listened enough, how important nutrition is. So it's, you know, nutrition is not just about the quality of the food. You can go buy the most expensive food out there, but if your dog has a sensitivity to an ingredient that's in that food, then your dog is not going to benefit from the food like you think. When you're shopping for dog food, stop asking what your neighbor feeds. Stop looking at the commercials. Stop looking at the front of the bag and going, wow, that looks good. Looks like I would eat that. It is the stuff that's on that bag is for your eyes and for your belly to get you to buy that. All right. So don't be just using the cheapest food or the most convenient food. All right. Or, well, this is what my granny fed, or this is what I've always fed my dogs. We have to start looking at nutrition in a more serious way. I personally think that a sensitivity and tolerance test on certain ingredients should be done with our dogs every year. And we use 5 strands, which you can also do for yourself. I have done one for me. I've done one for my dog. I've done 2 different tests for my other dogs, which were some other sensitivity tests. But 5 strands is who we're using now. And we really like 5 strands. And it really does give you really good information on what your dog should avoid and what they should minimize in their diet. It can make things very complicated in what you're feeding. I'm not going to lie. I get a lot of my clients that look over their 5 strands and they start to panic. But it's not something to panic over. It's about knowing that we are doing the best thing that we can do to help our dog's overall well-being through nutrition. Nutrition affects everything. It's going to affect not only the brain health. It's going to affect how the joints are working, how the muscles are working, the immune system. How well is that functioning? How strong is that? Does your dog suffer from chronic ear infections? Your dog should not be suffering from chronic ear infections. Do you know that the majority of ear infections are yeast-based? Guess what yeast feeds off of? Sugar. You know where there's a lot of sugar? In kibble. In a lot of the kibbles that you're finding at your regular markets, yep, sugar. Lots of sugar. And so instead of changing the food, every few months you go to the vet to get your dog's ears flushed, get medication, put them on antibiotics, which in turn screws up their system even more. So nutrition is so important. And when you have poor nutrition, when you don't feel good, right? You got inflammation throughout your body, right? I know when my body is full of inflammation and I can feel it when it starts. Now, why does my body get inflamed? Because I eat the shit I'm not supposed to eat. I know that I have level 3 intolerances on certain foods and I eat them anyway sometimes. I just know that I'm going to have certain repercussions, right? There are going to be repercussions such as irritability, lack of focus, bloated belly, dry skin. I can tell when I'm inflamed. Without even looking at my bloated belly, I can tell with just the way my brain works. Now, there are times that I choose to eat those things or drink those things. Margaritas, one of my favorites. You know what's in margarita? Tequila and lime. Do you know what I have intolerances to? Tequila and lime. It really sucks. But I'm going to have it. I'm going to enjoy it. And I'm just going to know that I need to make sure that I don't stack my intolerances on top of each other. Right, shrimp is also one of my intolerances, and I miss shrimp. But I'm not going to have margaritas and shrimp, and then maybe some lettuce, which is also my intolerance. And let's see, what else do I have issues with? Butter. Y'all, I didn't realize that butter was one of my issues until I looked back at my form the other day. Yeah, and I've been using a lot of butter. A lot of butter. And so lately I've been pretty bloated, been a little bit irritable, lack of focus, taking me a lot longer to get chapters done and edited. And I keep thinking, oh, I just need, I need to get focused. So what ends up happening, people say, oh, I must have ADHD or I have ADD or I just can't focus and I need meds to help me focus and I need this. And you know what? Before you start all that, I'm not saying you don't need that. I live with a person who has ADHD. My wife has ADHD and is on the spectrum. I get it. But we should start with gut health. And that is so important. And now she's working with a nutritionist because it's that important. Like, yeah, you can have meds, but if you don't focus on your nutrition, you're going to suffer. And your dog is going to suffer. Dog's going to be, have some discomfort, maybe some digestive upset. Maybe they have loose stools. Their energy levels are down. Their mood is hit or miss, right? They don't care for petting. I don't know how many of you guys are on TikTok. If you are and you follow anything dog, you might know who Neville is. I follow this rescue up in Maryland. They had this dog, Neville, Chihuahua. And Neville just loves to bite. I say that. I don't know a ton about Neville's history. But Neville finally did get adopted. A lady drove 8 hours to pick him up. And I love it. I love it for her. And I love it for Neville. However, I did see a video of Neville. And she was petting on him. And he started growling and snarling. And, you know, that is one of those things that we need to look at and say, okay, Neville's growling and snarling. Why could Neville be growling and snarling? Well, it was when she was petting him. When she was just sitting there, he was fine. When she touched him and petting him, it was a problem. So the first thing I'm going to look at is, does he have any discomfort with being touched? That's going to drive me right to gut health. And see, what is he eating, right? How's his gut health working? Would I look at just the growling and snarling and say, no, Neville needs to learn to be touched without growling and snarling? No, I'm not going to say that. Neville has the right to say, I don't want to be petted. But most dogs enjoy physical touch. And until I rule out the other issues, I'm not going to jump to, he just doesn't like touch. I don't know enough about what's going on with them. I would love to work with Neville, because I find him fascinating. He's one of my kind of, that's my kind of case. So if you're listening and you're Neville's new owner, hey, or anybody knows Neville's new owner or Neville, tell him to reach out. I'd love to work with him, because I think that Neville could absolutely live a life that is less stressful to where he feels like he needs to bite all the time. And he's grumpy all the time. Is that just who Neville is, or are there other things that are happening? So again, I'm looking at nutrition number one for that. So I'm curious, right? What does Neville eat? And looking at that to see if we're getting some issues that are playing from that, right? Now, touch could simply be just from learning history. Maybe he's not had a lot of positive interaction with touch. There are 100 things it could be, guys. I know you're probably yelling at the radio right now, but listen when I say, it's all going to start there in the gut, because that affects everything, right? Think about when you don't feel good, when your stomach hurts, you may not want to be touched. When you're sick, you may not want to be touched. I'm the opposite. I want to be touched all the time. Like, I want to be rubbed on all the time. Talking about that masseuse that, you know, if I had to live in masseuse, I would probably be pretty happy for a while. But you know, I still need to teach. Still need to teach. So nutrition, very important. Let's give it a, you know, a little example. And I'm gonna give you an example that's out of the book. Okay, for an example, a dog fed a diet that consistently upsets their stomach may appear restless, irritable, or unwilling to engage in training. This is that part where people say positive reinforcement is just not working. My dog's not food motivated. So I'm going to, you know, use fear tactics because he's fear motivated. I don't know. There's a lot of us that are fear motivated. I mean, that's what most of us, why we don't do illegal things, because we have too much fear to go to jail. That's how that shit works, y'all. Let's be real. There are times that you want to ram your car into somebody else's car. Don't lie. You want to do it, but you don't for the fear of the repercussions, right? That's good impulse control. Stay with it. All right. Another dog on a diet that does not meet their energy needs may seem lethargic or unmotivated, while one receiving excessive calories or inappropriate ingredients may struggle with weight gain that limits movement and comfort. When nutritional needs are met, the body is better equipped to cope with stress, support the nervous system, and recover from challenges. All right, so nutrition again, when we look at the five domains, nutrition, it's about ensuring that everything is working well for your dog's gut, not your granny's, not your neighbor's dog, and not your strangers that live in the same county as you on your hip Facebook page. All right? Stop taking advice from those that don't have the education and knowledge. Okay? And again, that may not, your vet may not have enough to help you. If your vet's saying, I just recommend X, Y, and Z, but they can't tell you why or what you should be looking for, then find someone who does. Again, doesn't have to be a canine nutritionist. There's a lot of us in the professional world that work with behavior, and especially serious behavior, that understands the importance of nutrition. Domain number two, physical health. Now, this is just not just talking about, hey, does your dog look good? Does your dog have good weight? No, we're talking about, illness, injury, mobility, pain, overall physical functioning. I see a lot of dogs with physical discomfort that are also exhibiting aggressive behavior. And the thing is that most owners believe that when their dog doesn't feel good, they're going to show it. They're going to show it in the way of limping or mobility issues. When in reality, your dog is not going to show signs of physical discomfort externally until it's really bad. And by the time it gets really bad, your dog's been suffering for a while. Right? Unless it was an injury that just occurred in that moment, right? Your dog's running, hits a hole, and you hear them yelp and then they start limping. Yeah, that was an immediate issue. But overall, if you have a dog who's suffering from arthritis, they may not be limping. I'm going to give you an example here with my cat. Now, I watch my cats. They go outside. They jump over the fence. They jump on the couch. They jump on the counters. But here's the thing. As I watched, one of my cats, the youngest cat, watch him age. And I guess he's like 9 now. And I've watched him. He loves, just like with my dogs, when I go to the bathroom, he loves to come to the bathroom and jump up on the counters to get petted on while I'm in the bathroom. The last probably 6 months, I've watched him hesitate to jump up on the counters. I've also watched him try several times. Not try as far as like jumping up and then falling, but like getting ready to jump up, like preparing himself. But it was taking a lot longer. That right there shows me that he has got something physical going on. Whether that's some arthritis, whether that's an injury that I didn't see. There's something going on. For me to figure that out, I need to take him to the vet. And I need to make sure my vet does a full physical. Not just a little touch here and there and listen to the heart here and look in the ears. No, I need you to move this cat. Wait, maybe we need to do x-rays. Whatever we need to do to figure out what's going on. Until I wait to see that he's lethargic, he's not eating as well, and he's just laying around a lot more and not even interested in going outside. That's not him. So you have to be able to know your dog and understand that there could be a physical ailment that's taken place that your dog is just not expressing to you. When a dog does have physical discomfort, oftentimes you'll see a dog who is really almost depressed, lack of enthusiasm, lack of desire to do the things that they used to do, right? If your dog doesn't want to go and chase the frisbee, it may not be that the dog has decided they no longer like it. Just the dog has decided that physically it's just not really good anymore. Arthritis is something that is being seen more and more often, and especially in younger dogs. I don't know the reason for that. I have not done a deep dive or study on that because that one is not my lane. My job is to notice the pain, notice the discomfort, and refer my clients to whoever that looks like, whether that's a canine PT, a pain management veterinarian, a holistic veterinarian who does acupuncture, acupressure. My job is to recognize that the dog isn't feeling well and make sure it gets to the professional that it needs to get to. A dog with undiagnosed arthritis will oftentimes growl when being touched. They'll avoid the use of stairs. They may resist cues that require them to move the body part, such as sitting or laying down, or maybe even standing up. And that's not out of stubbornness. It's because the movement hurts. Right? We have to, when our dogs don't respond to something, the first thing that we need to not think is, wow, my dog's being an asshole today. Wow, my dog's being stubborn. My dog is so hard-headed. Can we just stop thinking our dogs are waking up every day trying to be assholes to us? I mean, for real, y'all. Let's focus on the dog as a whole being. Why is my dog doing this today? Wow, my dog seems real lethargic today. I wonder what could be going on, right? I'll spend a few extra moments with my dog, you know, checking things out, rubbing their body, doing a little manipulation of stretching their legs, stretching their hips, things like that, just to see, is my dog kind of fighting me on something? Because that can tell me that there's a little discomfort. I spend probably 3 to 5 minutes every morning rubbing my dog. We talk, I rub, I move body parts and see if she's having any discomfort, if there's anything going on. She plays hard. She's an adolescent Rottweiler. She throws herself around everywhere. So I have to always make sure that she's feeling okay. But I also notice when there are days that she's not doing the stuff that she normally does, or that she's just, you know, not as responsive. I have to say, maybe she's feeling bad. And then I'll ask Britt, hey, did she get into something, right? She was here with Britt all weekend. I went out of town by myself this past weekend to go watch my Florida Gators softball play. So when I got home, I was told, well, she's had a little diarrhea. She's had a little loose stool. Well, is that from a little anxiety or nervousness because the environment changed? I was gone. I've only left her a couple of times since I've had her. You know, was it that? Did she get into something? Now, if it's not something that lasts several days, I don't overly concern myself with it. There are many times dogs will eat something, especially in the springtime, that creates a little bit of loose stool. Okay. But I want to make sure I'm keeping an eye on her and recognizing the symptoms that she's giving to understand where she is, how she's feeling, right? Where she is in her mental state and her physical state. Physical health can also be, like I said earlier, with the nutrition, can be a result from poor gut health. Immune system doesn't work well. If the minerals, nutrients that the dog desperately needs is not getting into the system, then the joints are going to be affected. Muscle tension, if the dog is staying stressed or anxious, that muscle tension is going to occur. And, you know, when we're stressed, we get knots. Right? Our dogs, when they're stressed and their muscles stay tense, that's a very uncomfortable feel. So you want to look at those. Those are the top two things I'm going to talk about. I'm not the top two things. It's just the first two things we're going to talk about is making sure that we have good nutrition that is right for your dog, not your neighbor's dog, not for 14 dog owners on the Facebook page. Your dog. And the only way you're going to know that is if you do a sensitivity test. Now, your dog may eat very well and may love their food. And you may be feeding a food that is chocked full of sugar. And you may say, well, my dog's doing great. But are they? Are they really doing great? Or are they doing okay and they could do better? And they could do so much better if we get them on something that is better for their system. I'll put the 5 strands link in the show notes in case you guys want to look at that and get the sensitivity test. It's a really good test. It tests, I think, 328 different ingredients. And of course, there are a couple of different ones that you can get. You can get dog food and you can get environmental. It's completely up to you guys. I focus mostly on the pet food intolerance test because I feel like that's something that we could control and change much easier than environmental. I had a client do this with the environmental, and the poor dog is, both of their dogs are allergic to the grasses in their backyard. Is there a lot we can do with that other than ripping up our entire yard and putting down new sod or fake grass? No. But what we can do is take the ingredients that we are putting into their system And we are giving them the best ingredients to help the immune system so that the environmental sensitivities like the grass do not create as much havoc in the system because the immune system is strong based on those everyday nutrients and minerals that they're going to be getting from the right food. Yeah, that's what I got. So there you go. We're going to talk about the environment, behavioral interactions, and mental state next week, if I can get through all three. You know, you guys know how I get. I just start talking and you never know where I'm going with this. But I'm going to try to hit those three next week. If I don't get all three, then we'll just make it a three-parter. I don't know. But that's what I got for you. If you're having any issues with your dog, if you want to talk about nutrition, if you want to do a short 30-minute Zoom just to talk about those things, we can do that. I also have a virtual consultation package for $260 that is going to include a written foundational plan and two Zoom consults, 130 minutes and 160 minutes. And my Zoom consults are typically $165 for an hour, and we just cut that in half for a 30-minute. That is on our Dog Speak Geek page with our online courses. Or if you just want to set up one session, shoot me an email, info@dogspeak101.com. More than likely, I'll send you a questionnaire. You'll fill that out and send it back, and then we can do a Zoom. Or you can also just set up for a normal one-hour session. I'm here to work with you guys because, again, like I said earlier, I need to teach you. I need to educate you. Dogs are depending on it. And any way that I can do that, I want to do that for you. And don't forget, I do have a lot of free information through the newsletters, through our blog, through our videos. I have things out there for you guys. But again, this is not about training techniques. This is about understanding who the dog is and truly meeting those needs. And when you do that, the actual training aspect of it is so easy. And it's so beautiful watching how that relationship manifest into something we all desire and just sometimes don't know how to get. So if you want that, reach out. Appreciate you guys. Love you guys. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. And as always, love your damn neighbor.